So far, we were discussing about anatomy, physiology, a little bit of pathophysiology, and we saw several images with one screening technique, visual inspection of acetic acid and Lugol-Zide. So now we are, and then Usha touched on, you know, what you do when the visual inspection is positive. So what are the options that you do? The options will always depend upon what we have, isn't it? What we have in terms of facilities. So there are various ways of managing. So one of the ways of management is to immediately treat people. Maybe even shocking. Okay? You do visual inspection with acetic acid, it is positive. You apply Lugol-Zide, it is positive. And clinically, there is no cancer. Okay? Clinically, there is no ulceration, there is no ulceroproliferative growth, there is no raised and rolled out margin, it is not chalky white. And you are reasonably sure, clinically, it is a dysplasia. Reasonably, because you are not completely sure. So the test is VIA positive. And then you treat immediately in the same setting. So it is a single visit approach. Okay? A single visit, screen and treat approach. If I am in Africa, in sub-Saharan Africa, there are no pathologists, or maximum one pathologist. If I take a biopsy, nobody is going to read. I have to send it, if I am in English-speaking country, I will have to send it to England. If it is French-speaking, I have to send it to France. If it is Portuguese-speaking, I have to send it to Portugal. And then you will spend $100. There is no way. So what they do there? They screen and treat. They don't even take a biopsy. As soon as you see, you treat. What's the danger? The danger is sometimes you may not recognize a subclinical cancer and you may treat it. It may be inadequate, but that is something you cannot avoid in those settings. What's the second disadvantage? You over-treat. There are people who are screen positive, but they may not have any dysplasia. It is falsely positive. Okay? So you are over-treating. What's the disadvantage? So now the science will say, oh, obviously not much. It is not going to do any harm, because reasonably, these are women who are 30 years and above, completed their reproductive life. And even if they are going to have childbirth and things like that, it is not going to affect. And the over-treatment is not going to kill them. It is not going to cause bleeding. It is not going to cause severe inflammation and things like that. About 20 years back, if you tell this, the gynecologist will kill us. The pathologist will kill us, okay? You know, shoot them, highly unethical. But nowadays, nobody makes much noise. In fact, in Thailand, there are 20 provinces who use a screen and treat program. So in the last 5 years, they have cumulatively examined 1.5 million people, out of which 7% people are positive. So they have treated more than 80,000-90,000 women with a screen and treat approach. In many African countries like Zambia, South Africa, Tanzania, Kenya, Uganda, hundreds of women have been treated. And these are countries with a very high HIV infection. When there is HIV infection, the risk of HPV infection is 10 times higher. The risk of cervical neoplasia is 10 times higher. And then in such people, when you do screen and treat and you send them home, there is a wound. So if they have multiple sex partners, they can even transmit HIV. So these are some of the disadvantages. But the advantages heavily outweigh disadvantages. The biggest advantage is, even if there is no dysplasia, what you do, you are healing the transformation zone. If there is some columnar epithelium left behind, they all become squamous epithelium. For human papillomaviral infection to happen, the usual route of entry is columnar epithelium, because it is single layer. It can straight away go into germinating, dividing cells. If it is a squamous epithelium, there should be an abrasion in the squamous epithelium, exposing the basal cells for human papillomaviral infection to happen. So essentially, now we believe a screen and treat approach, the advantages outweigh disadvantages. But in a country like India, where there is pathology service available, one of the things that you can do is you can direct a biopsy before you treat, so that a posteriori you know if you have correctly directed the biopsy, if you have taken a sufficient punch of the biopsy, so that a posteriori you know what you treated. So if it comes as metaplasia, don't feel bad. Oh, okay, it's a metaplasia, tell the people. So that is not harmful. If it is a dysplasia, a high-grade disease, oh, very good, I treat it. If it is an invasive cancer, don't panic. If it comes as an invasive cancer, oh, don't think, oh, I have done the greatest sin of my lifetime. No, you haven't done any sin. You call the woman back after 3 months, you reassess her. If you don't see anything, don't panic. If you see definite signs of cancer, you can do something. You know, some of the micro-invasive cancers with screen and treat disappears. In fact, you will be surprised. There are many cancer centers in Japan who will treat the stage 1 year cancer with cryotherapy. And they have exactly the same cure rates as that of a cold knife conization or a simple hysterectomy. Right? Okay. So we are going to see the test and treat approach or the screen and treat approach. Screen positive women, acetovoid lesions with no clinical evidence of cancer undergo immediate treatment with an ablative form of treatment, with a destructive form of treatment. In such a setting, you should not have a treatment which requires considerable surgical skills. You should need a treatment which can be done by a health worker, a nurse, or an ordinary doctor, a primary care practitioner, a general doctor, or a physician like me, who doesn't know how to operate. Right? So otherwise the screen and treat doesn't work, because if you have to have a skilled treatment provider, then the whole system fails. So it is very based on very simple screening test, which is visual inspection with acetic acid, usually, and then very simple form of treatment, which is cryotherapy or cold coagulation. So we are going to discuss about cryotherapy, cold coagulation here. At some point in time, one of us will talk to you about cryotherapy. Cryotherapy is, you take a probe which is brought down to minus 60 degrees Celsius or minus 20 degrees Celsius and put it on the cervix and freeze the cervix for, say, 3 minutes or 6 minutes or whatever it is, so that the intracellular water becomes ice very rapidly, and when intracellular water becomes ice very rapidly, it is very sharp. So it damages the cell wall and the cells die. That is how it goes. The second ablative form of treatment that you are going to see now, we are going to discuss, is what is called as cold coagulation. So this is the equipment for cold coagulation. What I am doing, I am just carrying, isn't it? This is only 2 kilos. So I can take it to anywhere in the world. What you need is, you need electricity. You plug it. So this is a highly transportable form of treatment, whereas cryotherapy, you have to go with carbon dioxide tanks or nitrous oxide tanks. If it is 20 kilo, you cannot carry, right? So it is cumbersome equipment. Okay, we'll see that later. A screen and treat procedure can cure all forms of CIN. Cervical intraepithelial neoplasia, Shravani discussed, grade 1, grade 2, grade 3. The only thing is, it has to be limited to the ectocervix. It should not go into the canal, because with an ablative form of treatment, you cannot go into the canal. And in fact, you should not treat the canal, because the columnar epithelium is very sensitive. It has pain nerve endings. The squamous epithelium doesn't have, ectocervix doesn't have. And the columnar epithelium, the endocervix, is full of autonomic nerve fibers. So most of the people who faint, so all the fainting attacks following cryotherapy and cold coagulation is inadvertently you are treating columnar epithelium. So the only thing is, it has to be a lesion which is completely limited to the endocervical canal, associated with considerable overtreatment. If you go to Africa, you do VIA, 20% are positive. You know why? Because they have very high HIV. 40% of the women are infected with HIV. and you come to Asia, to India, good providers in good places, 7 to 10% are positive. Okay? Actually, if you screen 100 women in India, 7 to 10% will be VIA positive. Actually, only 1% will have CIR. If you screen 1,000 women, only 1% will have CIN2 and 3, 2% will have CIN1. So you are over-treating. Okay? You are over-treating by twofold. Doesn't matter. Okay? How many agree with me? Gynecologists. Everybody agree with me? If there is anybody disagrees, you know, you can have disagreement. It's very healthy. So we have a situation. We are going to do screen and treat. VIA positive, you can immediately treat. HPV positive, you can treat. The only problem with HPV testing is it is cumbersome, you know. You have to take and you have to wait for so many hours. And you have to accumulate because it is a mechanical test. You cannot take one sample and then run the machine. It will be very expensive. So you have to assemble some 90 samples before you run the test. So it is not suitable for screen and treat. Because screen and treat, you need a real-time test. It gives the result immediately. So at the moment, we have only one test, which is visual screening with acetic acid or lubricide. Okay. So we have a VIA positive woman, and then we have decided to treat. In Sikkim, we would encourage you to use this cold coagulation. It is a misnomer. It is actually, it should be called heat coagulation, but the British has called cold coagulation. You don't know why. So it is heat coagulator, misnamed as cold coagulation. This essentially uses a probe, a metallic probe, the tip of which is a hot plate. Just like in our kitchen, it is a small micro hot plate. The hot plate can be heated to, say for example, up to 120 degrees centigrade. You can, we will show you later. You know, when you on the machine, there is a knob. With the knob, you can adjust the heat to 100 degrees, 105, 110, 120. And you take it to the cervix, you apply on the cervix and heat it to for about few seconds, 45 seconds. So what it does, it makes the intracellular water to boil. When it boils, the cell dies. In cryotherapy, you freeze and make the cell die. Here, you heat and make the cell die. So it is the treatment of cervix, the cervical epithelium, to heat, which is around 100 degrees, for about 45 seconds. Since the ectocervix has no pain nerve endings, there is no need for any local anesthesia. So it leads to thermal destruction of the cells. If you heat it for about 30 seconds, it destroys up to 4 millimeter. But today, Sarabani said, the crypts, the maximum depth of crypts is like 8 millimeter. So there are thermobiological studies. People have shown, if you heat for 45 seconds, the depth of destruction can go up to 8 millimeter. Okay? So the treatment time we recommend is like 45 seconds. So the equipment that you need is, it's a very sturdy probe. So you need all the cables and everything. And then in a screen and treat setup, you don't need a colposcope. You put the speculum, put acetic acid, put lubricide and delineate the lesion. And then see whether the probe covers the entire lesion. If it doesn't cover the entire lesion, apply multiple times, overlapping. It doesn't matter. Okay? So, as I shown, this is set at 100 degrees Celsius. And you take this, apply on the cervix and heat it. So these are the consumables you need. Because you have to delineate the lesion, 5% acetic acid followed by lubricide. So the indication. You can treat in a screen and treat mode. But the entire squamocolumnar junction should be visible. Because to see, to ensure the transformation zone is type 1 transformation zone, where the transformation zone exists only in the ectocervix, and there is no clinical evidence of cancer. The procedure is very simple. Lithotomy position, expose the cervix, with the speculum, apply acetic acid, lugolcidin, and then you apply, you set the machine at 100 degrees Celsius, and you apply it on the cervix, heat it for 45 seconds. And the women may feel sometimes cramps or a little bit of pain, so you assure, you get the informed consent, explain, and make it, you know, make her understand. You know, quite often we are very crude, you know, when we do treatments, because we communicate very less. This is one of the major problems, and we are increasingly communicating lesser and lesser as we go on, because we are in busy clinics and things like that. But in spite of all this, you should explain to the woman and make her relaxed. And very important, get an informed consent for any procedure that you do. In our experience, about 70% of the lesions can be treated with a single application. And another 20% will require two applications. Only less than 10% will require three or four applications. Now we have started using this. We have, in fact, in all our programs in the world, in different programs, we are increasingly replacing cryotherapy with this one. And we are quite happy with it. We will be publishing some of our results soon. Here is a lesion we have exposed. And with a single application, you see part of it is not treated. So what we do, we put the probe here and then treat it, overlapping. So this is just to show a situation where it is not. This is a situation where a single application is sufficient, you see. When you apply the probe, it covers the entire lesion, the entire transformation zone. So this is a single application is sufficient. Here, this is somewhat in a distorted anatomy. So you have to be very careful when you treat, you are not touching the vaginal wall so that it is painful and it can cause a vaginal ulceration. But since the probe is very small, here the possibility of we touching the vaginal wall or the fornices is very rare. But when there are distorted anatomy, you have to be careful. And then the treatment turnover is much faster. These are very important. So what do you do after treatment? What do you tell them? Number one, you don't pack the vagina. Because after treatment, there is destruction of the tissue necrosis. So there are excessive secretions. So for about 2 to 3 weeks, they will have discharge, you know, secretions. So if you apply a vaginal pack or something, the secretions are obstructed. It will increase the chance of infection, number one. But you can advise them to have a sanitary pad. A sanitary pad will allow the secretions to come out. And we advise people to avoid sexual intercourse for 4 weeks. 4 weeks is a long time, and it never happens pragmatically. In all our studies, we have noted more than 80% of the women commence sexual activity within 3 or 4 days after treatment. So this happens. So people say, okay, give them condoms for a month. So either you can give a condom for a month or just ignore it. Tell them, but it is up to them to follow. You know, you cannot enforce such things. So what we do? We always presume many things in medicine, isn't it? Even though we have no evidence, we presume. So we have many presumptive treatments available. So what we do routinely in all our programs, we give them presumptive antibiotics. Either we give them doxycycline for 5 days, or give them metronidazole for 5 days, or you give a single dose of metronidazole, but we are very scared because they go and vomit. You know, any symptom you induce after a treatment, it causes problem. So we don't advise a single dose, mega dose of metronidazole. Have anybody of you taken a mega dose of metronidazole? How many people? I have taken it. It's disgusting. You vomit. And for 4 or 5 days, you have a metallic taste in the mouth. So people will think, oh, you applied in the cervix, I have some problem with my mouth. You know? So avoid such things. So what you do? You give them doxycycline for 5 days. Or you give metronidazole, you know, BD for 5 days, 400 milligram BD for 5 days. But there is no scientific evidence to show that it really helps. But we all believe, so this is why I'm calling this as presumptive prophylactic therapy. So this presumptive treatment, and we believe it is useful. So you may use this, so it prevents infection. And you also tell them, If there is a problem, come back. So what is the problem? If somebody develops fever within 2 days, you know, very high fever, it may be due to some infection or something. So you presume again, okay? Or if they have excessive foul-smelling discharge, so it may indicate the wound has been infected. So you would like to reassess. Or if somebody has very severe lower abdominal pain, you know, this very severe lower abdominal pain always leads to a very severe over-diagnosis of acute pelvic inflammatory disease, which I have never seen. Okay. The classical definition of a pelvic inflammatory disease, acute pelvic inflammatory disease, is somebody has very severe lower abdominal pain and very severe tenderness in the lower abdomen, which can be controlled only by hospitalization and intravenous antibiotics. That is the definition of an acute pelvic inflammatory disease. And there is even more misused diagnosis called chronic pelvic inflammatory disease. There is nothing called chronic pelvic inflammatory disease in the world. But quite often we make that diagnosis. Okay? So the purpose of this is, in a very unusual situation of somebody developing this complication of an acute pelvic inflammatory disease, you provide them the treatment. Of course, if there is bleeding for 2 days. Bleeding after cryotherapy or cold coagulation is extremely rare. And the only possibility is you direct a biopsy and treat. So there may be some spotting. So what we usually do is we make them wait for about half an hour, 1 hour, and then re-examine and then send them home. So these complications are very, very rare. So what do you do? So there is no problem. There is no acute problem. They never came back in the first six weeks or so. Previously, we always used to think, call them after 4 weeks, 5 weeks to see the wound has healed and send them home and then call them after one year. And we couldn't maintain this follow-up policy. So nowadays, what do? You treat them, you tell them if these problems come back soon. If these problems are not there, come back after 6 months or 1 year. At least one time. And the purpose of this one-time follow-up is to see everything is okay. If there is a good pap smear facility available, you may take a pap smear. But quite often, the quality of the pap smear in most parts of the world are very poor. If there is HPV testing available, you can do HPV testing. Okay? If nothing is available, you apply acetic acid, Lugol side, and then see that both are negative, send them home. Okay? And if there is colposcopy available, you may do a colposcopy examination. So do whatever is possible at the end of 1 year or 6 months. So if somebody comes after 4 months, don't come now, you know, come back after 6 months. Don't do that. Whenever this person comes, use that opportunity to put a speculum and then see everything is okay. Okay? So what I'm saying is there are no hard and fast rules. So if you do at least a single follow-up after 6 months and establish there is no disease, the likelihood of the disease recurring is extremely low. So what do you do if you find disease and if you are suspicious that is recurrence or residual disease? You retreat. One can safely retreat with this 2 to 3 times. But if it is an extensive disease, send them for excision. And if you suspect invasion, then direct a biopsy and rule out invasive cancer. Okay, what type of biopsy you will direct? In a C-entry situation or whatever be the situation. How many of you directed biopsy in a precancerous lesion? How many of them have cutting biopsy punches? Directing a biopsy in a precancerous lesion is difficult. It slips. And the usual punches that you have here with blunt edges, it wouldn't cut. So you need very sharp biopsy. Just look at the procedure. The cervix is exposed. We have applied acetic acid. We apply, yeah. Now we will apply Lugolsidin. Yeah. You have to be very gentle. So you see the heat blanching around the probe. treatment is over. So nurses can be trained, health workers can be trained, doctors can be trained. It is very simple. It's a portable equipment, it is a portable treatment. So to do screening, this is what I was telling again this morning. It is not a cottage industry. Screening is not a cottage industry. When you think low technology, everybody thinks it is cottage. No. You need proper things. Proper examination table and proper linen. You know, we are always used to, you know, situations where you use very dirty things. You know, people think of public services, people immediately think it is very dirty. You know, like stained cloths, we don't change the linen after each patient. People think it is all very, you know, very expensive. No. If you have a proper screening service, you know, you should have material, enough material for 100 people. In all our field programs, we insist we use good linen. So when people come in, you see, it is very clean. You know, it is. You know, we cannot accept people. You know, one person comes in bleeding and you have the same linen and you put another people. So these are some of the important things. When you provide a service, you provide the service with proper infrastructure. And the proper infrastructure is not a luxury. It is not a luxury. It is achievable. And it is maintainable. And one of our field programs, I think Parthabhasu and everyone have visited, isn't it? Barshi. The field clinics are run with proper linen. That is the one which brings confidence to people. The clinic presents very nicely. Okay?